and go in detail as to what happens next. Again, Susan's point, this is not just a technological innovation in the building. It is our goal to make this building a focus point for the discussion around sustainability in Portland. So we have really carefully selected the tenant mix to combine academic, nonprofit, and city, and also for-profit groups in sustainability. This is a list of the space allocations that we have in there. The OUS is listed, as well as PSU. The Oregon Best, you'll have research space in here, which we'll talk about. The City of Portland, that's the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And the private and nonprofit space, that is the space that is available for both for office, for both private and nonprofits. We're very careful. We've selected this mix to have both advocates and people working in commerce and people creating policy all in the same place to make that discussion happen. And we believe that's the best way to combine the research and the best thinking to disseminate these ideas. And that's what we think this building and what Portland is about. We also want the building to be sustainability's front door or portal for Portland and for Oregon. And we're doing that a couple of ways. The goal is to get as many people as possible to interact with this building. On the ground floor, we're going to have an action center, which is going to be an interactive series of exhibits that's going to tell the story about this building, sustainable technology, and also sustainability in Portland. That, we believe, will be used very much by school kids, delegations visiting, tourists, people that want to come to Portland to find out about sustainability. We're currently working with Wieden and Kennedy to come up with a specific design and branding concept for this public space. So we're very excited. And that will be, it could be a later phase to implement, but we're very excited about having that piece. On the second floor, there'll be a conference center, and that will be available for tenants as well as PSU and other users. And we believe that this will be a real place for people to come together and meet. We're also talking to PCC, and I think you'll hear from them later, about the possibility of doing actual green job training and job matching out of this building in the public space to get more and more people involved. Finally, in terms of the available space, of the 43,000 you see, about 25,000 of that is earmarked for for-profit office space. We want to involve them extensively in the project. We're talking to a variety of firms, including Skanska and Cisco and GBD, about being tenants in that space. So although we do not have any signed leases, we do have good discussions going on. It is our intention to bring back leasing commitments prior to beginning of construction and have that pinned down. No one wants to build a speculative building. We want to have as little space as possible. There's 4,000 square feet of retail space. We have a 1,000 square foot commitment from Umpqua Bank, and the rest will probably be leased during construction. Retailers tend to have a shorter horizon in terms of that. But we are actively talking to some retailers that are interested, that also interested in participating in the Action Center. So we want to have the ground floor, again, have be the right mixture. You know, one more. Secondly, the folks at OMF have done a great job at analyzing the risks and do a good sense of the range of risks. We're trying to also be clear about what some of the rewards might be. This is an economic development project. That's why PDC is involved. It's about supporting the clean building industry. You know that's part of your economic development strategy. Since 2000, Portland's green building firms have grown while unemployment at conventional firms has declined, which says we've got a sector that's got growth potential. On an annualized basis, employment within the green building firms grew at 3.3% since 2009, while conventional firms contracted at 2.5%. We are growing green jobs. Reiterating what the governor said, 59,000 clean economy jobs in Oregon, second highest concentration in the nation. Since 2003, this industry has grown 2.2% annually. That's 10 times the growth rate for all other Oregon jobs over the same period. The workers earn 5.2% above statewide average, and in Oregon, 68% of all the jobs in the clean economy sector are blue-collar jobs. This is the industry we're trying to work with. This is why this building is important to move this industry forward. In addition to the specific jobs that will be created by the construction, approximately 780 jobs and about $100 million impact, we also believe there will be a secondary impact, and that is firms that are working on this project are going to be exporting this skill and this expertise outside of Portland, doing other buildings around the nation and around the world. and I believe you'll have people testifying to talk about that. This exporting of green building services and materials is a fundamental part of the strategy, and OSC is a fundamental tool to make that happen. One more. Susan mentioned that sustainability involves social equity, and we hope to take some innovations around this project there as well. For construction subcontracting, we are going for 25% rather than the required 20%. We are meeting the aggressive workforce hiring and training, and we're doing something new around professional services. We are piloting programs to increase opportunities for minority-owned women and business firms to be involved in the design and engineering phases of the project. And again, I believe you'll have additional testimony on this. In operation, we're working with PCC, as I mentioned, to have job training, green job training services on the ground floor to continue to have the building work for all segments of the community. Finally, the other two roles for this building, one is as a living laboratory. There will be a significant amount of research going on within this building. It's been organized by Oregon Best. Right now, there are 11 research projects identified with over 20 faculty from the Oregon University System, and they're targeting $7.7 million in funding to carry on this.
Oregon Best, if you could explain Oregon Best.
Oregon Best is the consortium of the Oregon University System working on commercializing research from the Oregon University System and working with Oregon and other businesses. A couple of the projects involve tenant behavior and water use impacts, a DC current microgrid, and alternative kinds of cement, which are much more sustainable. We also have a $750,000 grant that we've applied for from the Murdoch Foundation, which will also enhance this research agenda. So we're very excited about that. The last has to do with the branding of Portland. And again, Susan talked about this. We believe this building will extend Portland's brand. We believe that turns in specifically to export jobs for Portland's businesses. This is analogous to our commitment to light rail that then turned into be able to make streetcars. We believe the same progression can happen here. Finally, in terms of commercialization, there is a consortium of private and nonprofit firms that are involved. This is their logos. We believe that the building has been a focal point to bring these firms together around the building, and then they're talking to each other about ways they may work together. In your packet, or with your PowerPoint, you received a packet of letters of support and endorsement from these firms and others, which are interested in either being tenants in the project, are interested in donating equipment, or are interested in doing research through and with the project. Examples of commercialization that we hear about is Intel is working with us on some personal energy management software. CertainTeed is working with us on an advanced building envelope system. And Sanyo is working with us on a combination of their photovoltaic panels and commercial scale lithium ion batteries. And I believe Lithium and Sanyo will be addressing you in a moment. Last slide. Finally, in terms of timeline and next steps, we are here today seeking your authorization to proceed. Tomorrow, we go to the state and ask for their authorization to proceed. If those decisions are positive, we will initiate the final design process. Well, actually, it'll get us to 50% of construction drawings. That will be completed early next spring. Then we will negotiate a guaranteed maximum price. That will take probably until June to do that. In that interim, we will go back to the state when the legislature is in session, and we will seek final approval on the state bonds. That has to take place when the legislature is in session. We will then be coming back to you to seek your final approval of the development agreement and the authorization for city bonds. So I just want to emphasize this project will come back to you at least one more time for your final approval. If the schedule moves along, we will start construction in the summer of 12, and we will complete in the winter of 13. So again, before you, you have three actions. One is the resolution, which allows this to continue to negotiate on the terms in the staff note. You have two ordinances. One is a agreement with PDC that allows PDC to give the land and TIF money to the city. The city will in turn put it in the project. The second ordinance is between the city and OUS, and that will enable the city and OUS to split the cost, approximately $3 million, of this next phase of design. The implementation of those ordinances is contingent on the state taking a positive action tomorrow. One of the reasons we've scheduled this is to ask the city council to, again, take the lead in this and demonstrate our commitment And then tomorrow we will seek analogous commitments from the state. That's the end of the presentation.
Initial discussion, or Commissioner Saltzman, do you want to?
Who are the two tenants that signed 30-year leases?
The Earth Advantage is signed one, and we are negotiating with the Oregon Economic Council. They have not signed leases. They've been making letters.
Oregon Environmental Council, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So I do have a couple amendments. I maybe just wanted to preview them now, since there are other people testifying. And we'll hand those out. And I think they fit very well with the discussion we just had and all the discussions I've had to date with people on the building. And while there's much to be excited about the Sustainability Center, there's also, you know, quite frankly, much that makes me nervous as well. And so the two things that I am seeking in these amendments is, one, that there will be, in fact, a guaranteed maximum price on the construction cost. So my First Amendment does add a further, be it resolved, the City Council will not consider the final disposition and development agreement without a guaranteed maximum price on the construction cost of the Oregon Sustainability Center. And then the second relates to what I also believe is fully everybody's intent, and that is that if we do create a future urban renewal area in the PSU area, that there will not be urban renewal funds from that area used for the Oregon Sustainability Center. So my Second Amendment simply says, be it further resolved, no costs associated with the design and construction of the Sustainability Center will be allowed from tax increment financing from a potential or future urban renewal district.
And I support those amendments. We can do them now or later, whatever you want.
I wanted to introduce them for discussion purposes, if anybody else cares to testify or if Lou has any. And I also want to ask, who is the project manager on this for us?
This is a multi-headed hydra. No, there are...
That also makes me nervous.
No, well, it's a well-organized multi-headed hydra. Okay. Jeff Baer is representing the city, and PDC is working closely with the city. And then Mark Gregory is representing the Oregon University system. And then GED, developer, Jill Sherman, is involved there. So we're working on the group that will do the implementation, the two major owners, OUS and the city, and then the developer. That's our core team. And then close to that, Lisa Woff is the project manager for PDC, Michael Armstrong. So there's levels of involvement. But those are the three core group, three members.
But as we move from planning and engineering, then there will be a project manager for the group.
That's correct. The construction phase will be managed by OUS. So OUS will handle the construction, the construction contracts, and then upon completion, the city will actually purchase a turnkey condominium from OUS. So we want to have one project manager during construction.
OUS will be the construction project manager. Mm-hmm.
Correct. That will be centralized. And that will start as soon as we enter in the construction contract.
I have a question about the terms of the agreement with the state and regarding the risk of if the private and nonprofit spaces go unrented, that we and the states at the OUS split it 50-50. But at the end of the 30 years, OUS ends up owning 74% of the building. We don't seem to get any benefit from sharing 50-50 in those risks. Is that a final agreement that we don't get any benefit from that?
Well, actually, the way we've structured it at this point is that if the city is called upon to contribute towards that offset or a vacancy, that we are going to reconcile that, and we could potentially take on additional ownership from that building.
So when would that get negotiated?
That's actually part of our deal points with OUS.
Okay.
Right now.
And how would that? Where would that money come from if we need to put in more money to cover the lost rent?
Well, one area is we are putting on an additional surcharge on planning and sustainability's rent to bank that for future costs that might come up. But beyond that, we would have to come back to council.
But that your planning's rent comes from the general fund?
Not all.
Not all?
No.
Could you explain who's going to cover the increased costs of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability being in this building, plus the risk cost?
Just as when we moved into the Natural Capital Center, our rent went up, and also our grants went up, and so we were able to spread those costs between our different funding sources. Currently, about half, and sometimes much less than that, of the city of the planning sustainability's budget comes from the general fund. We also have solid waste fees. We also have as much as 30% of our budget from grants, contracts, and others. And they let us, in many cases, do administrative costs and building costs, those kinds of things, rent.
What's the maximum potential risk to the general fund?
If it was entirely vacant?
And if we were not able to get grants?
Are you talking about the risk shared space, or are you?
I'd like both those numbers.
The cost for, let me look up.
I believe our rent increase is $132,000 a year.
Okay.
And so
but that's primarily because they're taking on some additional space that they don't currently occupy today.
Okay. So that's a potential hit to the general fund.
Well, that's the premium, right, over the 1900 building?
Right.
Okay.
And does that factor in the 1900 building rent going down after we've paid that off?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Does the additional cost of BPS moving to this new building factor in that after we've paid off the 1900 building, the rent for BPS there would go down?
No.
Okay. And then what about this $8 million in debt that we're taking on for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability?
That's the 20-year debt service to purchase the condominium share of the building.
And where does that money come from to?
We would be back to seek authorization to issue the bonds on that.
And then that would be additional drain, expense to the general fund?
Plus the $132,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But that would equal what planning is currently paying in rent right now.
So just like the rent, planning sustainability has helped the city buy the 1900 building, the current 1900 billion rent plus $132,000 would buy an asset, a sellable asset in the Oregon Sustainability Center.
Thank you. And is somebody going to talk about the minority contractor
piece? That's next.
That's coming up. Okay, thank you.
If I could make a statement about Commissioner Saltzman's amendment.
Yeah.
We totally agree. We do not intend to proceed without a GMP. There may be a timing issue in that we plan to finish the 50% construction drawings in about February or March of next year. The state may want to seek authorization to sell bonds at that point. The GMP actually takes 90 days to negotiate, so we may not have it legally obligated until June. So we may bring you something contingent on not to exceed GMP, or we may jiggle with the timing. But we definitely agree we are not going construction without a GMP. So we'll get back to you with specifics on timing.
But I assume you do agree that a GMP, guaranteed maximum price, should be part of a final development and disposition.
We agree, yes. Yes. Okay.
So that's what my amendment says.
And then, yes, I agree. In terms of your point, Commissioner, there are a variety of risks, and we've tried to find ways to mitigate them, such as tenants that are taking 30-year leases, such as creating a replacement reserve within the building. One other thing that is there is that PDC has agreed to dedicate the South Park Block loan repayments from that urban renewal area to this project. So if there is a shortfall, then there will be between $100,000 to $170,000 a year of TIF dollars that can use to pay that down. That is shown in your slides as South Park Block URA loan revenue. So it's there to handle exactly that kind of extraordinary situation so that the general fund would not be hit.
So just
go ahead,
Commissioner. If I could follow up on that to either Lou or Jeff. So in the OMF analysis that we got, it makes clear that the city is acquiring a 25% ownership interest condominium, but is taking on approximately 50% of the risk for the building, 47%. Have we considered alternatives in the course of negotiations which would bring our risk more in line with our equity position?
We've had many discussions about that, and what we've ended up with is this combination of the 50% equally shared risk for that portion that would be leased out.
I understand that's what the proposal says, but has the city explored alternatives to bring the risk more in line with its ownership interest?
Commissioner, let me see if I can shed some light on that. The reason for the difference, as you remember those three tranches, is that the OUS financing has a 30-year term. City financing has a 20-year term. That makes a significant difference in terms of the occupancy costs. So we all agreed that it made more sense for OUS to own that section which will be tenanted. However, the liability you're talking about is a potential liability. If the city has to fund it, then the ownership shares do change and adjust. So if the city's risk liability has to be met, the ownership changes. So it is a self-adjusting. If the general fund or PDC have to pay in more cash, the ownership between OUS and the city will be adjusted.
So any amount that is contributed by the city towards that 50% risk pool automatically under this agreement adjusts our equity position in the building?
That's correct.
And what does that practically mean? You were talking about condominium spaces. So we would have a fractional interest in a condominium space?
It would actually mean that at a later point, if the building ever wants to be sold or we wanted to, the liability responsibility would change, we would readjust that. But our ownership, the city's ownership, would adjust based on actual cash into the deal. Practically, the city could take space or not take space. That's its own decision. But it would be building up more equity. And after 20 years for the city and 30 years for OUS, the building is paid for. So our equity share would increase on that basis.
Additional discussion at this point. We'll have more time later as well. Thank you very much. Now, President Vim Vibel from Portland State University, Andrea Durbin from the Oregon Environmental Council, and Alan Hippolito from the Coalition for Equity. Please come forward. Mr. President, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this project. A lot of the substantive points have already been made, so perhaps my main purpose and goal here today is to underscore and reaffirm our enthusiasm and interest in this project. It was about 4 years ago, before I came to Portland State, that Portland State picked the topic of sustainability as a niche area, as a substantive area where we could really make a mark on not just the region and the state, but the country and the world, where we could really be better than almost anybody else. And we picked that area both because we had very substantial faculty expertise in so many different fields related to sustainability, both environmental, economic, and related to social equity and justice, but also because it was such a good fit, of course, with the city's priorities and what the region and the state are already known for. So we saw it as a way to build on that synergy and collaboration. Now, choosing an area like that, of course, then was recognized by the Miller Foundation when they gave us a $25 million grant to help us further develop this. But in general, it means that you gotta put your money where your mouth is. You gotta be a leader and develop this area. Oregon Sustainability Center to us is just a great way of putting Portland State, the city, the region, and the state in the lead nationwide and worldwide related to sustainability. It is and will be indeed a living laboratory. The specific research projects that already have been mentioned that will be undertaken and more will no doubt be developed. The building will promote and create expertise for local firms, which will lead to exports by these firms. And indeed, in my own travels in the Middle East, I've often seen Portland firms being hailed for their expertise in this area. We will be a model for the world. We will locate our first Stop Portland program, which is a joint effort with many people in this building, which brings a lot of visitors' interest in sustainability to Portland. It will draw new grants, which, as you know, grants essentially are an export industry. It means money coming from outside, because most of this is federal money, to help support students, faculty, developing new knowledge. And this is indeed something that we've been working on over just the last 3 years. Our externally funded research has grown by 60%, going from $40 million to $64 million a year. Again, almost all new money creating jobs here in Portland. And just by the very presence in this building, of faculty researchers from several institutions, because our colleagues from OSU and U of O will have faculty in there as well. The private sector businesses and the not-for-profit inevitably will lead to interaction and innovation. Now, just because this building is cool, you know, doesn't mean that we don't care about the costs. I'm very aware of that. Given our continually declining state funding, that pretty much every dollar we spend is significantly tuition dollars. And we already know that tuition is an obstacle for many people. So we're very cautious about spending money. At the same time, Portland State owns or leases 5.2 million square feet of space. This is an additional 34,000. It's less than 1% of our space inventory. So relative to our total space consumption, space cost, this is a very small piece. And we think the extra investment, because it is a little more expensive than regular, than the cheapest space we could find, is very much worth it as an investment in research space. And indeed, if we were to compare this, instead of looking at just sort of, you know, the cheapest office space, but you consider this on a par with a laboratory, it is really no more expensive than that. And that's among the reasons why we are very enthused about it. We made major investments as an institution 10 years ago and more in the streetcar. We've continued that in the light rail. Nobody at the time could necessarily predict exactly how those projects would come back to really increase our visibility and the overall attractiveness, not just of our campus, but of the region. Those investments that were made by very prescient and foresighted people back then, we need to continue in that vein. So I'm very pleased to make this project part of our priorities. We very much look forward to our collaboration with our not-for-profit partners, as well as the for-profit partners, and, of course, with the City of Portland. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Hippolito.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Alan, and I work for Verde. We're a nonprofit. We serve communities by building environmental wealth through social enterprise outreach and advocacy. I'm here as a representative of the Community for Equity, which is a group of organizations of color that come together to access and influence environmental policymaking in a strategic way, and that's Hacienda CDC, Native American Youth and Family Center, PCRI, Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives, El Programa Hispano, Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, ERCO, Urban League, and ourselves. I'm here to speak to the work that we've done on the equity attributes of the building. We've been active in this project since last summer, since it first came before you for approval of funds for schematic design. And we had three goals at the outset, or three areas we wanted to work on, so I'd like to talk about the work to date in that regard. First, we wanted to affect the composition of the board. We felt there needed to be community representation, equity stakeholder representation on the board, and as of March, Aneshka Colas-Dixon from Colas Construction, as well as PDC Commissioner, is representative on the board, and I've been serving since March on behalf of the Community for Equity, which has allowed us to be together every Wednesday afternoon and really figure out how to integrate equity into the design and operation of a building. I also want to talk about our second goal was economic opportunity in the design and construction of the center. So you have, as part of your materials today, a construction equity agreement that deals with workforce, that deals with construction, that deals with professional services. It's based on the work that we did in Clean Energy Works Portland, which had a community workforce agreement, which then became the High Road Standards of Clean Energy Works Oregon. So we have some pretty aggressive standards for target business participation, and while there are different levels of appreciation within our group for the legal motivations behind words like aspirational and strive to, there are many components of this building that we're striving to do stuff. Our environmental goals are also aspirational in the sense that we're pioneering stuff. And if that stuff doesn't happen right, then we didn't do our job. And so that's how we're looking at these minority and women-owned business goals for construction. And so I want to be clear about what our expectations are, including to our prime contractor and subcontractor partners, that if we can't achieve these things, we didn't do what we were supposed to do on this building. So we intend to achieve them. We intend to work very hard to make sure that they happen. And then I want to follow up on what Mr. Bauer said about professional services. This is a new arena. It's something, at least for me, that has been very important. And what that means is with success, it'll allow diverse contractors to compete as these environmental techniques get market acceptance, right? That we want the building to be copied, right? And so if I'm an owner 3 years, 5 years down the line, and I'm looking for a business to do a certain thing, if we have a diverse professional services group, then we'll have new competitive opportunities for minority and women-owned professional services firms moving forward. But because it's a new arena, we're going to have to develop infrastructure to support this. We've been doing a lot of work in construction long before I started running my mouth. And so we don't have groups like Metropolitan Contractor Improvement Partnership and things like that built up around professional services for minority and women-owned businesses. We'll need to make that infrastructure to be successful. The third area we were concerned with is the operation of the center. And this is the greatest work that we have left to be done. Who's going to use the center? Who's going to occupy the center? And how does the programming of the center serve not just the people who visit it, but serve the activities that are happening on the ground in different communities to help people meet their daily needs? So ultimately, this is going to require work. It's going to require investment like any other priority of the building. I've said many times that justice costs money, and this is no exception. So lastly, I just want to say that what my real hope is that this is how we do it from now on, right? That equity is a non-negotiable fundamental of sustainability. We've done a lot of good work together over these last several years, 20% minority and women-owned business participation in Clean Energy Works Portland. We saw some numbers earlier this week, Clean Energy Works Oregon. We've doubled the number of women workers in the project from Clean Energy Works Portland. Greater Green now has minority and women-owned business standards and workforce standards in 1% for Green and the EcoRoof grants. We're working on new models of park development. Cully has an eco district, and we're starting to talk about the bike economy. So my hope is that today with the center, what we're doing is sending this signal that sustainability can be an anti-poverty strategy. It can be a way to drive environmental resources into low-income communities in response to existing community needs. And so that to all of our partners in this world, whether they work for you in your city or they're firms with whom you contract to advance sustainability or they're nonprofits that work on sustainability, you know, if you get up in the morning and you go to work on your sustainability project and you don't have equity stakeholders involved in your project, or you get up and you don't have equity tasks on your to-do list in your sustainability project, you know, you got more work to do. You're not doing what we're paying you for. You're not meeting the job description. So my hope is that we're sending this signal. This is how we're going to do it from now on. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to work hard on the project.
Thank you for your contributions. Ms. Durbin.
Good morning. I'm Andrea Durbin, Executive Director with Oregon Environmental Council. Mayor, City Commissioners, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. Oregon Environmental Council is actually one of the originators of the Oregon Sustainability Center. We've been working on this for several years now. And we hope, along with a number of other nonprofits, to occupy and tenant the building once it's built as well. I'd like to focus my comments today on really three main points of the values and the opportunities that we see in the Sustainability Center. First, the city of Portland has really been a leader nationally in addressing climate change issues and by putting forward action plans and actually making things happen to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The built environment is responsible for 50% of overall greenhouse gas emissions. So in order to really address climate change issues, we need to figure out how do we change our built environment and create and build net zero energy buildings. And honestly, we can talk about this until we're blue in the face, but until we actually do it, try it, test it, make mistakes, and learn from it, we're not going to actually create new net zero communities that actually lead to the kind of climate solutions that we need. Secondly, I think on the social equity issues that Alan has addressed, you know, we feel that there's been a lot of progress and really a healthy and productive conversation about how to integrate social equity issues into sustainability issues. And for too long, we've really seen these as separate and distinct issues, when in fact what we know is that unless we integrate social equity into sustainability practices and policies and approaches, we could risk potentially exacerbating inequities, but certainly we will not ensure that we maximize benefits for all communities. And I think that there has been considerable progress and still considerable work to do on the Sustainability Center to really provide a model for a new approach and, as Alan noted, hopefully an enduring and lasting approach for integrating social equity and sustainability practices. And I think that we have made progress there. And lastly, a number of the speakers, Lou and Susan, mentioned earlier about the collaborative nature of this project, which really remains very unique, bringing together the university system, private sector, nonprofits, and the city, really looking at the those that work on sustainability. And I think the challenge is to how can we, in working together, achieve more around sustainability? Because really, these sectors need to be connected if we're going to achieve more in the sustainability field. I think that's a real asset value that this project really presents and holds. I would say in closing that there is no question that this is a challenging project. It is bound to be challenging because we've never done this before. We've never built a net zero energy, net zero water, net zero waste building. At the same time, we're trying to link research in universities to commercialization opportunities around sustainable technologies. At the same time, we're trying to create an opportunity and a forum in a sense of place for where people can come and learn and be trained around sustainability practices. And that is why it is so challenging, and is it exactly why we should do it, because it's demonstrating leadership, and it's the kind of place that the City of Portland and the State of Oregon should be. So thank you very much. I hope you'll support it.
Thank you, and thanks for your early and continuing leadership on this from the nonprofit side. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from Mr. Sato from Sanyo, Mr. Scholl from Intel, Mr. Kelly from Neil Kelly and the Oregon Business Association. Welcome. Glad you're here. Mr. Sato.
Yeah. Greetings to our friends as the Portland City Councilors. I am Kuniaki Saito, the manager of the Solar and Smart Energy Divisions, and representing today the Sanyo North America. Sanyo is one of the world's leading producer of energy products, like the solar panels and the recharge batteries, as well as a variety of the electronics. And the primary aim is environmental sustainability. Sanyo enjoys being a part of the community of Oregon. Sanyo Solar Oregon Factory manufacturing the solar wafers, silicon wafers. And we currently employ about 200 Oregonians in these facilities. Sanyo has chosen to be a major corporate partner of the Sanyo Oregon Sustainability Center. We are very excited about the project because of the opportunity to supply our advanced solar technologies and to help the center meet its energy goal of net zero. Our solar panels offer the world's highest cell conversion efficiency in the market. OSG will also provide Sanyo a chance to display our leading technology in power generation and a chance to demonstrate our advanced energy storage for next generation energy efficiency power distribution systems, like in a DC distributions. Yeah. It is a very advanced technology for electric DC distributions. We'll be able to host our customers and offer a real-life case study on how the system works in these buildings. In addition, Sanyo plans to participate in ongoing field research and development in a new applications, products, and systems that can contribute to energy efficiency production and storage. There are many opportunities to collaborate with many Oregonians, great academic and business organizations, and we believe this will provide ongoing opportunities for economic growth based on the leaderships of the OSC and its partners. OSC will become the example of a modern building through its advanced energy efficient design. We are very anxious to demonstrate how our technology plays a part in the center's systems. We believe OSC will provide lasting leaderships and economic opportunities for Oregon as well. This time, we very much thank you for giving us the opportunity to partner these areas of energy leaderships. We believe these partnerships will bring better products and better outcomes to our challenges of sustainable growth, and we will provide economic opportunities for all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, very much. We appreciate your partnership and your early commitments around this project. We appreciate it very much.
It is our pleasure. Thank you.
Mr. Scholl.
My name is Scott Scholl from Intel Corporation, and I bring today a letter that I think you'll find in your packet. I'll enter it in the record, expressing our continued support for this project from the highest levels of the company. This letter is from Justin Ratner, who's a member of our top executive staff. He's Intel Corporate Vice President, Senior Fellow, and Director of Intel Labs. Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, Intel submits this letter of support for the technical, educational, and economic development goals envisioned in the design and construction of the Oregon Sustainability Center. Please use this public statement of support to help the continuation to completion of the OSC project. We believe the City of Portland has been working with the Oregon University System, Portland State University, and private sector partners like Intel and others to urge legislatures to continue forward with the bonding authorization of the 2009 Oregon Legislature so that the design, development, and construction of OSC moves forward. Intel believes the OSC project is a catalyst for leading technological innovation in our regional economy that will have long-term positive results for the employment and business growth opportunities while providing opportunities to educate Oregonians on sustainable practices. Some of these innovations include a building that represents national leadership in energy and water efficient commercial buildings and a regional and global example of the economic and environmental benefits of green design and eco-technologies. It will build momentum for Oregon's position in energy-saving technologies, architectural and design services. Once developed, these products and services are applicable locally and exportable globally. The project reflects a new model of public-private collaboration, bringing together the innovation and product leadership of companies like Intel with public investments in infrastructure and facilities. This investment will contribute to a positive economic environment across Oregon. The OSC strengthens Oregon capabilities in technology, research, and development by establishing a physical living laboratory for testing and teaching these energy efficiency measures in a real-world office setting. Intel will provide OSC with prototype equipment, software, consultative support from our researchers at Intel Labs that will allow office workers to track and visualize their personal energy consumption. Intel will also explore opportunities to collaborate with OSC on other research topics of mutual interest, such as a DC direct current microgrids, super efficient DC data center designs for buildings powered by photovoltaic energy. We support the State of Oregon's previously authorized bonding strategy that enables the development and construction of the OSC. With OSC, Oregon will create a beacon to the nation and the world to demonstrate the economic value of these leading new technologies and related knowledge services. We believe it will provide good jobs for people of the region and have a lasting impact on green technologies for the long term. Sincerely, Justin Ratner, Intel Corporation. Thank you for your support.
Well, thank you as well for your partnership, and especially the part that we've had a lot of international and national interest is that part you both sort of spoke on, but about human behavior meets technology, meets the building facility goals and the operations. That having you as a partner on that is really, really important, and we thank you.
Our pleasure.
Mr. Kelly.
So my name is Tom Kelly. I'm here representing both the Oregon Business Association and my firm, Neil Kelly. I'm happy to say that the Oregon Business Association that has members like Intel and Nike and many of the largest employers in Oregon, but also many smaller companies as well. Last week we endorsed this project. Our board of directors endorsed the project. From Neil Kelly's perspective, I'm going to give you a couple of quick statistics. Back in 2008, we had 170 employees, and many of those were in our cabinet division, building cabinets for South Waterfront and the Pearl and so on, and all those high rises, and we've been building a green cabinet for a long time. Well, of all parts of our company, that division was impacted the most by this downturn. We went from 40 cabinet makers on the floor of our shop to, now on a good day, it's 8 or 9. Very big impact. Well, I view this as an opportunity for you to show the leadership you showed with Clean Energy Works Oregon. Just since the first of the year, my company has added 20 jobs due to Clean Energy Works Oregon. And we expect to add quite a few more. I think this opportunity for you is very similar. Not only will we be providing jobs for the construction of the project and hopefully for my cabinet makers contributing some of that product, but to help firms like mine develop new product and be able to expand their businesses on an ongoing basis. We were just coming out with a new product line of cabinets that we call Naturally Northwest. Can't believe nobody else has taken that name. We getting it registered right now.
That's a good name.
And it's all going to be indigenous woods, and one of them is juniper. And the architects are hearing it first time now, but I hope we get some juniper into this project. And the reason why that is important is that there's 6 million acres of juniper in Oregon that really it's an invasive wood, even though it's indigenous. 200 years ago, there was only 1 million acres. And juniper depletes the water table. It's has a negative impact because the predators for the Oregon sage grouse hang out in the trees to go after the sage grouse. So the harvesting of that particular wood has, and the commercialization of it, we're working with Oregon Solutions, the BLM, the Forest Service, on that project to commercialize that. Well, it can also be used besides biomass and decking on your deck. It can be used in cabinets. So we're really excited about it. And also as part of that, I mean, we developed the first Living Building Challenge cabinet product. Now, when I say that, our product meets the Living Building Challenge. You saw it at the June Key Delta Center. It's that kind of innovation that is going to be spawned by this project and show off Oregon products that can be exported, you know, not just in the Northwest, but outside of the Northwest and even potentially internationally. So this project is, I think, is potentially more important than Clean Energy Works Oregon as a job producer for the long term. I know it is, and it's sure there's risk. There's always risk when you're going to be a leader, and I wholeheartedly endorse the project.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Really appreciate your partnership on this. And finally, we will hear from Linda Gerber, Portland Community College, and Ahmed Nabipour from Interface Engineering, who I read in the media yesterday has a big announcement as well. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Commissioners. I wanted to start to really talk about the business of architecture and design. As you may have heard, our firm, along with Green Building Services, our teammate, were selected as site-wide sustainability lead and commissioning. Yes, we are commissioners too. So commissioning consultants for a very large project in Qatar, in Doha. Which is the redevelopment of downtown Doha into sustainable contextual architecture and engineering. And our edge as a Portland consulting firm on our experience and the resume, not just ourselves, but many firms like us in Portland, we do have an edge. but it is ever so slight, and we have to continue to try to keep that edge. 20 years ago, when I was looking to move my career to a more livable city, I looked at Portland, but I thought Portland would be too small as far as having a good community of architects and engineers. But in fact, I found out that was not the case, that Portland was an exporter of design and engineering. And I realized in order to be an exporter, you have to be an innovator. And Portland architecture and engineering community is much larger and brings much more revenue to the city and the state than the city and the state can have projects. And it's because many architects and engineers in Portland are doing work all over the country and all over the world. And that is because we keep on innovating. And in order to innovate, we need to invest in research and development. And this building's development is a big piece of that. So since 20 years ago, Portland then, I think somebody said EcoTrust is now that old. It started with EcoTrust, started with investment into something new, right in 2001, I think, at the height of the crash of the service industry. Office buildings were subleasing, where EcoTrust filled up pretty quickly. But we have kept that edge. We compete against world-class engineers and innovators outside of our country, and we continue to have more jobs in Portland. Portland engineering firms and many architecture firms are hiring people in this economy because we are doing work all over the country and all over the world. And we'll continue to keep that edge from the private side, from the engineering and architecture. I can promise you that we will continue to innovate because we have a great community of innovators, not just our firm. There are many other engineering firms, many other architecture firms. But we need the city's help. We need to continue to invest in research and development. We need tools. And I think this project would be a very good example of that. We competed against, for this project in Qatar, we competed against many, many large engineering architecture firms from England, Germany, all over the world. And because of our combined and vast experience in LEED and sustainable buildings and the resume we had developed because we were a Portland-centered business, we were able to beat a lot of these teams and get this project. But it will continue to be a challenge to be a leader. And they asked us when we started the project, they said, well, a few of these buildings, most of the buildings that LEED Gold is a minimum, but they have most of them are going for LEED Platinum. But they said there's a few buildings that His Highness Amir wanted to use as demonstration of even further sustainability. And they said, well, what can you guys do? We said, well, we're working on a living building. You can do a living building too. And it's that type of experience that we need to continue to win projects to bring jobs to Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad your firm is part of our team on this building. Ms. Gerber, welcome back.
I should also say we are glad that your firm is located in downtown Portland.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. Portland Community College, as I'm sure you know, is the largest post-secondary education institution in the state of Oregon. We have almost 10,000 students, and we provide access to many, but particularly to first-generation college students, people whose parents never went to college, and to people who are unemployed and looking for retooling so that they can find new work in the new economy. excuse me. We have recently passed a $374 million construction bond, capital bond, which we have dedicated a great proportion to building sustainable buildings and retrofitting our old buildings to become sustainable. I'm proud to be the president of the campus that has a vision of becoming a net zero campus for our 50-year-old buildings. We provide two-year education programs that educate students to be Portland's best technicians, including engineers, engineering technicians, landscaping, HVAC, building construction, architecture, renewable energy systems, and other two-year technical degrees. The state economist, Tim Pitowski, about a year ago gave a presentation where he stated that 30% to 40% of the new jobs that are going to be created in Oregon in the next 10 years are going to be what he calls middle skill jobs, that is, jobs that require two-year degree and training, and that's what Portland Community College provides. PCC was on the first Oregon Sustainability Center Steering Committee, and we support the now boards. That was before there was a board, but now there is a board, and we support that board's determination that the Oregon Sustainability Center will be a building that contributes to social justice and equity in our city. Dr. Preston Pulliams, our district president, has signed a letter of intent stating the college's commitment to plan a PCC presence in the Oregon Sustainability Center. And our college faculty and administrators have come together and developed a white paper to identify the core services that we would like to provide. So in addition to teaching sustainability courses, there are four other core services the college envisions providing in the approximately 3,000 square foot of space that we would expect to use. One is a Careers in Sustainability Resource Center. And in that resource center, citizens in the Portland and area and in Oregon at large would learn about green jobs, what they are. They would learn about the educational programs in this state and across the country that prepare people for those jobs. They would learn about scholarships and financial aid that's available and be helped to apply for those funds to help finance their education. They would be connecting students with cooperative education, internships, and service learning opportunities so they get a chance to get in on the ground floor while they're still students in the green businesses in our community. And it would connect employers with trained residents who are ready to do the jobs that they need. So that's core service number one. Number two would be a green small business development center. PCC does the small business development centers here in Portland, and we would see this as providing the same services that we provide in general, but focusing those on green businesses and helping people who have ideas for creating businesses, the entrepreneurs in our community, to learn about developing a business plan, learn about capitalizing their businesses, learn about accounting practices and other things that many people who have very innovative ideas simply don't know now, but need to know in order to be successful business people. The third would be community education classes. These would be non-credit classes, but classes for the general public to learn how to live sustainably and how to, become more green in their practices in their homes and in their businesses. Examples, we currently create or offer and could provide in this building classes on green roofs, stormwater management, composting, wind and energy for residential applications, and other eco-friendly living classes. The fourth core service would be bringing our National Science Foundation Advanced Technical Education Program to the center. We have recently been awarded a $1.3 million grant from the National Science Foundation. That's a five-year grant. And the purpose of that grant is to train our teachers at PCC to incorporate green practices and knowledge into their career technical education courses. In addition, that grant provides funding for us to bring people from other parts of the state and the region who are high school teachers, college teachers, and university teachers to learn about doing the same in their courses. And we have written into that grant funding for a presence in the Oregon Sustainability Center, so we're anxious to see it get built.